This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A white supremacist has murdered 49 people in New Zealand, in Christchurch, New Zealand, which I believe is the capital. Maybe Auckland is. I'm not sure. In any case, one of the two major cities in New Zealand, as I recall. And, you know, quoting Donald Trump or referring to Donald Trump, referring to other white supremacists, referring to battles that white people have fought against Jews and Muslims, in some cases genocidal battles, all the way back to like the 13th century. I mean, this guy is steeped in the folklore and history of white supremacy. And this is his pitch. And this is his statement, and he streamed the thing live on Facebook and on and you know, on social media platforms, and it's heading, it's happening. This is spreading around the world right now, and we've got a guy in the White House who calls these kind of people very fine people, you know, and his very fine people only murdered one person in Virginia. This very fine person murdered 49 people. Incredible. Meanwhile, today is the day that children across the nation are walking out of school for the climate strike. And at the same time that they're doing that, we get this report. This is by Isaac Stanley Becker in the Washington Post a couple days ago. The headline kind of summarizes it. Whites are mainly to blame for air pollution, but blacks and Hispanics bear the burden, says a new study. This is a study that came out of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America, right? An official study. And what they found is that first of all, that air pollution is responsible for more deaths globally every year than car accidents, number one. And number two, that, you know, a statistical analysis found that while white people, largely through consuming more stuff, because white people are wealthier, and the production of that stuff produces air pollution, white people, largely because of this consumption, are producing more air pollution, and people of color, particularly blacks and Hispanics, are receiving more of it, exposed to it. In fact, the percentage is that white people get 17% less air pollution than is generated by their consumption. So, you know, if as a white person I am buying products and I'm buying more products than the average black person because, or family, let's say, my family, their family, because we have more money, because that's just how American society has gotten organized over the last 400 years, and we still have that legacy, and this is one of the reasons why we need a conversation about reparations, but that's a whole other thing. But in any case, if as a white person I'm buying this stuff, where's the stuff made? Where's the electricity generated? Where is the coal ash being stored? You know, the poisonous byproducts of the production of electricity through oil or coal, for example. Where is the manufacturing being done? Who's living alongside the highways and heavily traveled roadways where there's lots and lots of car exhaust? It's going to be mostly poor people and people of color. And so the bottom line is that a white person receives 17% less pollution than should be if they were exposed to all the pollution that was caused by their consumption. Whereas blacks receive 56% more pollution than would be represented by their consumption, and Hispanics receive 63% more exposure to pollution than would be, considered for their consumption. And then they go on to add this from the National Academy of Sciences study: black Americans were more exposed than whites to every type of emission, from road dust to construction. The same held true for Hispanics. And so, you know, here we are. We've got, you know, not only white nationalism and, you know, guys shooting up and killing people in the name of the white race, but we still have a situation in the United States where white people don't even suffer the pollution consequences of their own levels of consumption, because we've managed to physically segregate our society in ways that the high pollution zones are also the poor areas, which in most cases means areas where there's lots of people of color living. It's amazing. One other thing I wanted to point out to you, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. It is Anything Goes Friday here, but, you know, I like to go off of these riffs every now and then. Donald Trump just had 12 Republicans turn against him in this vote for his national emergency, basically saying, sorry, you know, having immigrants at the border asking for asylum is not a national emergency. Your wall is not a national emergency. And the national emergency laws should only be used for actual emergencies. This is what the Republicans were saying to him. And everybody's focusing on that. What I find fascinating is that 12 Republicans had the intestinal fortitude, shall we say, to say no to Donald Trump. And I hope that this is causing Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House of Representatives to go, what? You know, to say, hey, wait a minute. The Republicans are actually willing. Now, see, this was one of those cases where, you know, I said earlier, if you're gonna try and take Trump down, you better accomplish it. Jeff Flake and Bob Corker spoke out against him, and he made sure that they got primaried. They just had to throw their hands up and walk away. They couldn't deal with Trump and his followers. So, you know, these Republicans in the Senate live in fear and terror. This is why Tom Tillis and Cory Gardner backed down and said, oh, no, we'll do your groveling. We'll grovel for you, Mr. Trump. We won't vote against you. Please don't hurt me. I'm just little Tom Tillis. I'm just little Cory Gardner. So, you know, a few Republicans wimped out, but 12 of them didn't. And this is a situation where Trump can take revenge. Now, what if it was impeachment? Once he's out of office, how's he going to take revenge? Well, maybe he can do some rallies, but, you know, who's going to show up? I think that, you know, Trump's base, in quotes, if he's successfully impeached and removed from office, is going to evaporate because Fox News is going to turn against him. They're going to have no choice. And that's his base. It's not like these people are committed to Trump. It's like this television network is committed to keeping them committed to him. Their loyalty is not to Trump, it's to Fox and to right-wing hate radio hosts. And I'm not sure that if Trump is impeached and removed from office that they will continue to support him. They're going to move on. They're going to start praising Mike Pence and whoever he picks for vice president. They're going to be setting up the next election. They're all about being part of the power structure, and Trump will no longer be part of the power structure. So what this vote tells me is that 12 Republicans are willing to challenge Trump in the U.S. Senate right now over a relatively small issue, that is the Constitution. I say that, you know, facetiously, but you get what I'm saying. 12 Republicans are willing to challenge him even now when he can fight back and has threatened them. In fact, he made this personal. He said, you're not voting for or against the Constitution. You're voting for or against me, Donald Trump. He personalized the whole thing. He said, I'm going to keep a list. I'm going to go after people. Which is why Tom Tillis and Cory Gardner wimped out and freaked out and started, you know, turned into puddling little wimpy, messy, sloppy, slimy, even more so than they already were. To the point that the newspaper, the main newspaper in Colorado, I don't have the story in front of me, forgive me for not remembering the name of the newspaper, but the main newspaper, one of the main newspapers in Colorado, which had endorsed Cory Gardner when he was running for the Senate, said, we take it back. We're reversing our endorsement. This guy is a total wimp. He's unwilling to stand up to the president on an issue of the Constitution. But if they all knew, these Republicans all knew, that this vote would get rid of Trump forever and would cut off his knees in terms of public support, I'm beginning to think that there might be the votes in the Senate to remove him from office if you can make a strong case for impeachment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you think on that or anything else? As I said, it's Anything Goes Friday. We can talk about whatever you want, 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Kim, watching us in Portland, Oregon on YouTube. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thank you. Okay, so we need to remember the American way so that we can reclaim the American dream. And remember is spelled with a dash, R-E-dash-member. And that means waking up out of the Republican fog of isolation that's been, you know, perpetrated for the last 50 years and reconnecting with our neighbors and, you know, just rebuilding the ties of community that have been completely broken.
Yeah.
So in that line, on May 1st, I'm actually going to be launching the Brainchild Adoption Center, which is going to be offering new kinds of businesses that have jobs that can't be outsourced or automated. And I've spoken in the past about gentle disposition, which is one of those kinds of businesses. So I will be contributing about 12 businesses to the Brainchild Adoption Center.
Great.
And I'm actually doing this as free speech for two reasons. One, I want to refute the gentleman that you've had, very well named Mr. Sauer, who says the only reason we do things is for profit.
Right.
And I'm also refuting the Supreme Court's decision that money is speech, because I'm making speech money with the Brainchild Adoption Center.
Okay. Kim, good luck, and plug your website.
Actually, that's not available yet, but it will be by May 1st.
Well, when it is, let us know. Okay, thanks
a
lot, Kim. Great to hear from you. Michael in Torrance, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Michael, what's up? Michael? Apparently no Michael. Let's try Claro in Redway, California. Hey, Claro, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. It's a cool sweater you have on today.
Hey, thank you.
Anyway, initially I was calling to lighten it up and make an honest statement that I think Michelle Obama would make the best candidate for president in 2020.
I think she could win.
Yeah, I do too. That's what I mean.
You know, the problem is that she's never run for elected office. I mean, what Hillary Clinton did is she had to prove that she wasn't just a first lady. That, you know, because she shares a lot with Michelle Obama. They're both law school graduates. They've both been private lawyers. They've both been first ladies. But then she went and she said, let me prove that I can actually get elected to something. And she ran for the United States Senate from New York, got that seat. And then after she left the Senate, joined the Obama administration after she lost that election in 2008 and became Secretary of State. Michelle Obama has not done those things yet. And so I would expect that if she had the same ambition that Hillary Clinton had of becoming president in her own right, that she would be doing those things right now, and she's not. So I think the odds, Claro, of her ever running for president are probably zero.
Well,
I'd love to vote for her.
Yeah, I agree that she probably can find much better things to do in a personal way, but Trump also had no
political experience. No, I don't mean that. I just don't think that's what she wants.
Oh, no, that's why I said it was a light comment.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, I really appreciate the rest of what you're talking about today, and so I'm going to pass and let it continue.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Claro, and it's great to hear from you. I appreciate the call, and thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV there in Redway, California. It's 19 and a half minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. It is Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, the place where smart people get their news, the place where we ask, you know, is Walmart a person? No, we say, not a chance. We'll be right back. And welcome back, Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's on your mind today?
Hello there, Mr. Hartman. How are you?
I am great. I hope you are, too.
Outstanding. It's always good to talk with you.
You
have, and rightfully so, spoken about white supremacy, particularly in the wake of what has occurred in New Zealand. Horrific. But I wanted to... I was actually working on a piece, Tom, and it's one of the most difficult pieces I've ever written, and it's taken me some weeks to edit. I'm still not finished, and it's called White Supremacy, the Silent Killer. And you see, white supremacy, imagery is a big part of our lives now with smartphones and videos and YouTube. But white supremacy We think of the Confederate flag, we think of Klan members and their hoods, we think of burning crosses, swastikas. But I wanted to present maybe to you and your listeners that white supremacy, particularly for me as a black American man, is something quite different, much more insidious, much more silent. Let me give you a couple of examples. If you Google the word God, if you Google the word angels, almost every image that you will find will be of someone with a white face.
Or even Jesus, yeah.
Disciples. But ironically, of the characters of the Bible, if you Google Satan, you will find a dark-skinned image.
Right.
When Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death, white people get a tear in their eye and they look at the flag, and that's patriotism. But if I say that as a black man, I become a threat.
Well, also, Patrick Henry was the largest slaveholder in Virginia at the time he said that, which is insanely ironic.
Isn't it? Nuclear weapons. If you think about nuclear weapons, we have white supremacy that says that we're the only people that have the God-given authority to not only have them, but use them. And you can't.
Right.
And
we did.
One more.
Yeah.
And you look at the world, white people are the only place, and New Zealand is ironic, Australia, the United States, North America, white people are the only people, mainly in places where they originally did not come from.
Yeah.
Which means that they had to subjugate, murder other people.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, Tom, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it was the Moa people in New Zealand, and it was the Australian Aborigines in Australia. And, of course, it was Native Americans in the United States. And the genocide was so extensive. I mean, there were horrible genocides on the African continent and, frankly, on the Asian and even European continents, throughout the last 6,000-8,000 years that we can see the remains and the evidence of. But to the best of my knowledge, none of those continents were virtually cleansed of the original people living there, which is the definition of genocide, these massive genocides.
You mentioned Aborigines, and that term has always fascinated me because what it is a conjunction of two terms, abnormal, original. That's wonderful.
I think the ab in abnormal and in Aborigine probably both have Latin or Greek, has a Latin or Greek meaning. I don't think it ties together. But, basically what it means is the original people, the people who were here first.
Yeah, but who are second-class citizens and subjugated.
No, I get that, I've worked in Australia in Aboriginal communities, worked in a school up in the Lockhart River area, and they're proud to call themselves Aboriginal. They're proud of the fact that they're the original people. They use that word the way Native Americans here use the phrase Native Americans.
Well, I think, and they very well should be, but I don't think that changes really the substance of what I'm saying, Tom.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say to you is that you have a world where the white man, in terms of numbers, is a minority. And the world is getting to a point now. You can take Ilhan Omar's comments. The world is getting to a point where this subjugation, and then you have someone like Donald Trump who feeds into this whole thing. This guy in New Zealand apparently not only mentioned Donald Trump, but Dylan Roof as well. See, black people being killed in church is something, nothing new. We've had our children bombed in church.
Yep.
So all I'm getting at is that when we talk about white supremacy, we need to think of it in a greater sense as opposed to these images. That's really the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, and then that was the point that I was making with the whole thing about how white people get, less exposure to pollution that causes strokes, cancer, and heart disease, less exposure to that fine particulate pollution than do people of color, both black and Hispanic. Substantially, I mean, measurably. And this is the National Academy of Sciences coming out and saying this. That's, when you said you were talking about the invisible or silent killer of white supremacy, I mean, that's the thing that immediately came to my mind when you said that. And that's just just pollution. I mean, the economic issues, the lack of educational opportunity issues, or even quality of education issues, policing issues. I mean, there's just, we can make a very, very long list here, Kenya.
Yeah, well, we could, Tom. But I do want to say this to you. I was really glad to hear you say that. Environmental apartheid is real. I heard a guy on right-wing radio say that these immigrants are coming with nothing. What did the white man come to North America with other than slaves?
Guns.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is the essence of my book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. Kenyatta, thanks for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It is Anything Goes Friday here on The Place Where We Dare to Ask, Is Walmart a Person, and Dare to Say No, the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. What do you think? Is Donald Trump going to call this an act of white terrorism, white supremacist terrorism, which this guy clearly is? Or is he going to kind of mumble around it? He's already mumbling around it, of course. That's amazing. Nathaniel in Palmyra, Pennsylvania. Hey, Nathaniel, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am
Tom,
well.
I'm concerned about the tenor of the current Democratic primary field. My number one goal here is to see Mr. Trump not reelected, but I think Democrats are committing a number of unforced errors that are going to ultimately not sway the people who switched from Obama to Trump in 2016 back. I've done a lot of research on this in terms of, what parts of the country we're talking about. We're talking about suburban Tampa, northeastern Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. There's just a few things that are going on here.
So you're talking about all the states where Bernie Sanders beat Hillary Clinton in the primary.
Yes.
And your concern is that what?
My concern is a few things. One, we're having problems with labels and words. So John Hickenlooper goes on MSNBC to introduce his candidacy, and he's asked point blank, do you consider yourself capitalist? And he fumbled all over the answer.
Right.
He had a problem.
Oh, I saw this happen on MSNBC this morning. The Democratic Party needs to issue some advice to people about this question. A capitalist is a person who earns their living through the returns on capital. They make their money with money. A capitalist is not a person who owns a factory. That's an entrepreneur. That's a business person. That's a person engaged in free enterprise. It's not a person who owns a store. It's not a person who invents a product. A capitalist is a person who makes their money principally off either dividends or interest. They make their money from capital. And John Hickenlooper is not a capitalist, or he might be now that he's sold his brewery. But when he was running his brewery, he was not a capitalist. He was a businessman.
So call yourself an entrepreneur, but call yourself something. And you're exactly right. The Democratic Party, I don't know if they need to just en masse do this because I don't want there to be a uniformity of thought here.
I think there should be. I mean, this is not, Nathaniel, the word is being abused. Socialism has multiple meanings, right? I mean, you can look up socialist in the dictionary and you can find the meaning of, the state controls the means of production and supply, the old literally Marxist definition that was applied in China and Russia and, the Soviet Union and whatnot. Or that it's a form of government like social democracy that provides for the needs of the people as well as keeping business running and things. But if you look up capitalist in the dictionary, there's only one definition: a person who lives off capital. And there's probably not more than a couple hundred thousand capitalists in the United States. There's very few people who actually make their living just living off daddy's trust fund or investments.
Agree with you 100%. Words matter less than the messaging and the tenor of the message. And
sure,
if they can't even answer the question on national television, with essentially they're creating between the way that Representative Omar's comments were completely mishandled.
It happened this morning on Morning Joe with the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio. They said to him, are you a capitalist? And he said, I'm a social Democrat. I'm a democratic socialist. And they were like, so you don't like capitalism? And he says, it's not about capitalism. I'm a democratic socialist. And he should have said, I am not a capitalist. I don't earn my money from dividends or interest. I don't earn, I get it, Nathaniel, but... So
in the interest of brevity, what my general fear is that when it comes to 2020, it won't be so much voting against or for Donald Trump, but you may have a number of people voting against whatever apparition the Democratic Party comes up with because they just keep fumbling all over themselves on questions that are relevant to these.
I think they're actually doing a pretty good job of laying out the issues that people care about. The majority of people, more than 80% of Americans, want to see Social Security strong, want to see a national health care system that covers everybody at lower costs. By the way, these are the things that Donald Trump campaigned on. It's the reason why he won those states.
I will tell you, if that were the messaging, if that's what we heard day in, day out, instead of Trump is a boob, Trump is a this, Trump is a that, yeah, or reparations.
But that's what the Democrats are saying, Nathaniel. Your beef is not with the Democratic Party or the Democratic politicians. It's with the media. And the media is owned by big transnational corporations that are scared to death of socialism, even democratic socialism, and really want more of this raw capitalism where they can basically control the political process and continue to reap obscene profits and keep Americans largely uninformed. We've got a serious media problem in the United States. But, you know, the Democratic Party, I think, is doing a pretty good job. But thanks for the call. Marcus, and thanks for not being a concern troll. I was assuming when you first said I'm concerned that I thought, oh, my God, I got another Republican consultant on the phone whose first words out of his mouth are going to be, I've been a lifelong Democrat. Thank you for not being that. Marcus in Victorville, California. Hey, Marcus, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. It's good to be on the show. You're a fighter for the free speech and, you know, the good fight out there. So, I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about the New Zealand event that happened, but not so much, you know, what everyone else is discussing, but what's going to happen as a result of it? Who Right. would benefit the most, you know, from the further divide, essentially?
Well, what I don't know, and I'm guessing is going to shake out in the press coverage over the next couple of days, but what I don't know, and I wasn't able to easily research this morning, is whether when Australia, there was a massacre at Port Arthur, what's the island just south of Australia, but it's part of Tasmania, in Tasmania, which is part of Australia, essentially, in 1996, as I recall, maybe 1997, the Port Arthur massacre. And the Australian papers published photographs of the shooting victims. I think he killed 37 or 38 people. And it so horrified the Australians that they changed their gun laws, and they made it basically, you know, a whole lot harder to just be a casual gun owner. You've got to either be a serious gun owner or not at all. You've got to make a commitment to it. You've got to get a license. You've got to know where your gun is. There's levels of responsibility that didn't exist before. And, you know, they just basically, in my opinion, came up with common sense gun laws. And then they also did a gun buyback program that bought back what, if you were to apply to the United States, would be, you know, tens of millions of guns. It was, I think, 600,000 or 700,000 guns in Australia. And I don't know if they did that in New Zealand or not. I don't know if this is going to call for, you know, because this guy was using a military-style assault rifle. And which one he was using, you know, I've heard reports that it was, an AK-47. I've heard reports that it was an AR-15. I've heard, or the military version. What is that? I forget my military weapons. But, you know, whether this will lead to a call for gun control in Australia or not, or in New Zealand, rather, or not, I don't know. But that's an interesting question that I would put out to any of our people who are familiar with the laws there. But is that where you were going, Marcus?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to hear your take on it. I unfortunately, very unfortunately, did see the video, and I just have to say he had training. This man was trained.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, these days you can get that training from video games. You know, a lot of these video games were originally developed by the military to train soldiers in how to kill people.
I believe it.
It's not a matter of belief. You can look it up. It's like that's where a lot of them started. And, he may have had military training, or he may have just been a serious gamer who was playing those kinds of games and had just learned how to kill people that way. We don't, you know, again, I don't know right off the top of my head. Marcus, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching us on YouTube. Dennis in Millington, Michigan, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Well, I think you just covered a lot of this with Nathaniel earlier. But my big complaint, again, like with you, is the media. I think when there's no good discussion about defining socialism, for instance. It seems to me that they take the Republican point of view that when we say socialism, they want us to get a picture in our heads of Joe Stalin or Mao Zedong.
Right.
Instead of talking about the democratic socialism of, let's say, Norway or Germany or France or those countries that are that way, and to a certain extent, of course, Australia and even Canada in some ways.
Yes.
So I just want to say that the other thing is that what they should do is actually point out to most people, and I'm like a middle-class person, and I'm old, I'm 72, and the idea is there are so many people my age and that are white males and white females, and the idea is they don't understand that they're basically socialists.
Yeah.
Most of them were, you know, they were educated in public schools, they get Social Security, they get Medicare, and you can go on and on and on to the public.
Well, that's my rebuttal, and this is what it makes me crazy that I'm not seen on TV, is when one of these fools on television, you know, who pretends to be a TV anchor or a TV star or whatever, says to some, you know, Democratic politician or consultant, you know, well, you know, what's going to happen if America ends up with a socialist in charge? The immediate response is not, well, it should be. Well, okay, you know, if we get somebody in there, if we want to get, you know, if you're so worried about socialism and you want to do away with socialism, where do you want to start? Should we start with Social Security, do away with the socialist Social Security? Should we do away with socialist Medicare? Should we do away with our socialist public roads and highways? Should we do away with our socialist air traffic control system? Should we do away with our socialist fire departments? Should we do away, you know, I mean, where do I do away with our socialist public schools? Of course, Betsy DeVos wants to do that. I mean, where right. do you want to start, you know, should be asked of some of these TV hosts who are so hysterical that there's socialists in the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Well, DeVos is from my state.
Yeah, my state, too.
And we have been thoroughly, I feel devastated in public education here. Hopefully our new governor can put us back on the right
track.
Yeah,
more than half of your kids in Michigan now are going to private schools, you know, as the result of the efforts of Betsy DeVos, her family, and her foundation to a large extent. Dennis, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching us there in my home state. I grew up in Michigan. I lived there the first 27 years of my life. I love Michigan. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday in just a moment. And welcome back. Paul in Lucerne, California. Hey, Paul, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Not much, Tom. What's up with you?
I'm here.
All right. This is my concern.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Everybody's talking about a blue wave. Well, it's more like a balloon, and it can be popped really easily. And doing nothing about Trump could pop that balloon. And I agree with you when you say impeachment is not going to work. But the 25th Amendment can.
Well, wait a minute. I'm not saying impeachment isn't going to work. I'm increasingly thinking it could, number one. And number two, what do you think is going to cause that deflation of Democratic enthusiasm to show up at the polls? With the lack of holding Trump accountable? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, not doing nothing about Trump.
Right.
Something has to be done, and something big has to be done. All right? And I can understand the hesitation on impeachment, because there's a really good chance you'll lose. All right? They're not voting against Trump. They're voting against a future Democratic president declaring a national emergency over guns or over climate change.
That's a good point.
They're not voting against Trump.
That's
okay?
a good point.
So the 25th Amendment, we have a panel loaded up with Republicans on the presidential side. We have Bush, Cheney, Dan Quayle, and Al Gore. You can't really use Clinton or Barack Obama.
Al Gore was not a Republican, Paul.
I know.
Okay.
But three of them were, and we have one Democrat.
Okay.
And then you give them a list of psychiatric professionals to choose from. We pick two, you pick two. That way they can't say we sandbagged them on the panel. And then that panel reports back to Congress, and then they go have a hearing in the Senate. Now, you're making them defend former presidents and vice presidents saying he's not capable of doing the job, and psychological reports saying he's not capable of doing the job, he's totally mentally unfit. That's totally different than impeachment.
Yeah.
Now you're really making them defend something.
Even but there's no mechanism for doing that, Paul.
Yes, there is. Or 25th Amendment says, or a panel Congress shall impose.
Right, but that is after the vice president has written to Congress and said...
that's not what my congressman told me. And I asked him to look it up.
Yeah.
He says they can impose a panel because the 25th Amendment was because of Woodrow Wilson. His vice president was corrupt, and so was his panel.
Now, I thought the original 25th Amendment was because because what's his name died of a stroke.
That truck guy. No, the guy had the stroke, and his wife and the chief of staff and the vice president ran the country for the last part.
Amendment 25. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive department basically shall transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the power. So that has to be thereafter. If the president says there's no inability, then the vice president, the majority of the principal officers must within 4 days transmit to the president. This is where you have the debate between the two that he is unable to discharge. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours. If the Congress within 24 hours is not in session, determines by two-thirds vote, the president is unable. Yeah, I don't see anything about a committee here.
Well, I'm trying to find it right now because I read it in mine.
I'm reading it. It's like,
well, I got it too. I have a from the ACLU, the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I don't see it in there. I think Paul, if the source of your information was your member of Congress, that they're mistaken. But good try. I mean, but getting Mike Pence to say Donald Trump is crazy ain't gonna happen. Paul, thank you for the call. Well, maybe not. I mean, it's possible that Mike Pence is so power hungry he would turn on Trump. But I'm not seeing that right now. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman program. John in Kansas City. Hey, John, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to Sirius XM. John? Oh, no. This is, people have us on mute. They try to take us off, and they accidentally hang up the phone. I'm so sorry, John. Call right back. Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? Just a few things real quick. When you talked about the bullet here in Chicago, there's a thing that I call, having the bullet or the book, book being education.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Chicago, the mayor closed 50 schools on the west and south sides, which is mostly black, Hispanic, and poor white. And we've been having this flood of guns coming from Indiana.
Right.
And they won't stop it, And so we're having a lot of these killings on the west and south side because the mayor has actually given us no choice, but because he closed the 50 schools, then he didn't upgrade the schools that were left. He just closed them, took the money, and gave it to the richest suburbs, not only in Chicago, but some of the richest suburbs in America, up in Glencoe and Winnetka and these places. And so now we have these two black women candidates for mayor, and I'm hoping that they'll do something about this, and especially lifting the redlining of the west and south sides, which has been on for economic development, which has been down on the west and south sides for now 51 years.
Whoa, yeah, Maine, I'm with you, and I think it's not just historic; it's also pregnant with opportunity. The perhaps a bad metaphor to use when talking about women candidates, but the fact that you've got two people of color, two women of color, black women who are the two candidates who are running against each other for mayor of Chicago, I think it's just an extraordinary thing. You're going to have a black mayor, and I share your hope for the future of Chicago. Maine, thanks a lot for the call. John in San Francisco. Hey, John, thanks for listening to Real Talk 910. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I heard your discussion with Nathaniel, and my argument again is that we just need to hang up the preamble to the Constitution as a Democratic Party and point out establish justice and serve this domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, blessings and liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And then put at the bottom health, education, welfare, justice, freedom for all and our descendants. And say, that's my brand of social democracy or democratic socialism,
sure,
however you want to put it.
The reason why, John, I think it's more potent to say, okay, if you're opposed to socialism, which part of current American socialism do you want to do away with and go through my list? The reason why I think that works better is because all those words that you just discussed are essentially abstractions. And they cause, you know, when people hear a word that is an abstraction, that has multiple meanings and that has, you know, wide application to a broad number of things, they hear something like the general welfare, you know, different people will produce different pictures in their minds when you say that. And therefore, they have essentially different meanings to different people. To say, do you want to do away with the socialist fire department? Nobody can interpret that any other way than it's the socialist fire department or the socialist public schools.
But I suggest this is a banner, and then at the bottom you put four or five bullet points, and I'd also include paper ballots for all elections, and say that's what we support, and this is in the Constitution, this is what we start from.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, John. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. But I just don't think that individual candidates can do. Yeah, if you're starting out saying I'm going to get elected, but first I have to educate everybody, you're not going to get elected.
No, I get that, but I'm saying this is where we start from. This is our 240-year Constitution.
I absolutely agree with you that America was founded on socialist principles, largely for white men, but socialist principles nonetheless. And that, you know, in the very first years of its founding, America, both Congress and the executive branch and the courts supported it. Created socialist programs like poorhouses and medical services for poor people and food services for poor people. This has been with us since the George Washington administration. It's always been part of what we have done as a nation. We started out as a socialist nation. We started out as a nation of barn builders, basically. By and large, you know, Europeans wiped out the Native Americans as they were moving across the country. They would get together and, you know, communities would come together and build each other's barns and build each other's houses. And, you know, that's all socialist stuff. I mean, to the extent that you can disentangle it from the genocide that preceded it. And
so what I'm getting from you is you don't have faith that the average American can absorb that and articulate that.
I don't think the average American has the time to think about it. And B, I think when you communicate a message that is specific, you want to get rid of our socialist, fire departments? When you communicate, right, or our socialist public roads, when you communicate a message that's specific, it is impossible for people to miss it or misinterpret it. And that's why we need to be as specific as possible. I completely agree with these generalizations and abstractions as being the core of democratic socialism. Completely agree with you, John. And I love your idea. And, you know, I would encourage you to put it on the internet and make some brochures and pass them out and let's start educating people. But in terms of this election, we need to puncture this stuff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.